You're all copying me.
All right. Hey, before I begin, I'd first like to thank again Nami for arranging this, and Rabbi Cohen, and for all the men for coming out tonight. And I told them, when Rabbi Cohen first mentioned he wants to have a shiur for men, I told him from my experiences in my past 15, 20 years of speaking, it's very hard to get men out to speak. You know, when you have a shiur, let's say of 100 people, you're lucky if you get 20 men. Most of them are women. And here we have, Baruch Hashem, you know, a nice crowd of men. So thanks for taking out the time to come and hear the shiur. I know some people are taking the MP3s, but there's more to the shiur than I'll be able to get into the hour tonight. On the CD that I have outside, the shiur lasts about an hour and 15 minutes. But we're not going to go that long. We'll probably stop you after an hour. Cover some of the topics on the sheet here. And the other topics of communication, if you're interested, you can purchase the CD outside or the tape. What? Understanding your child's needs. The same. Okay, so first we start like this. There's a story told of the Sasa of a Rebbe, Chassidish Rebbe, that he told his Chassidim that he learned what true love is from two drunks. Yeah, I just want to, before I start, the Rebbe can just close his cell phones. Just so you know, as he closed yours. Yeah. Now, Rabbi Bess, I don't know if I told Rabbi Aryeh, Rabbi Bess is shul. If your cell phone goes off in shul, you got to pay $18 to the pushka. There's a penalty, $18 if your cell phone goes off in shul. Anyway, he does that. It's a sign, big sign from the shul.
Come
on,
place in Israel and get one of these. Games.
Yeah. They have these things. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a shul in the Kiryat Sefer, there's a thing, a mobilizer, that it doesn't allow the cell, it blocks the reception from about 20 feet out of the shul while you're in the shul. It's hidden someplace in the ceiling, in the acoustics. When you walk in, there's no reception. And it doesn't go back till you get like 20, 30 feet out of the shul. So maybe that would be a good idea to have here too, if you can find something like that. Anyway, so the Sasa of the Rebbe said that he learned what true love is from two drunks. He was walking down the street once, and he saw two drunks sitting on the curb, and one is the other one, you know, with a bottle of whiskey or beer in his hand. Do you love me? And he says, of course I love you. And then the other one said, do you really love me? So he said, of course, I really love you. So he said, if you love me, do you know what I'm missing, what I'm lacking, what my needs are? So he said, how am I supposed to know? I'm not a prophet. So he said, well, if you don't know what my needs are, then how can you say that you love me? So he says, the Sasa Rebbe said, to really love a person, you have to know what they need, what they are lacking. And the same thing goes with chinuch, with child raising. In order to really say that a parent loves the child and is out for the good of the child, he has to know what the child needs for their well-being. Now, we're not talking about the materialistic needs, we're not talking about buying them either new electronic, you know, high-tech stuff for them, whether it's a cell phone, an iPod, toys, the games, but what they need for their emotional growth to make them what we call today a mensch. And that's what the shiur tonight will be about, and we'll be focusing more on what the father, rather than parents as a whole, should give over to their children to know what they need to make them into a mensch. The first thing is they need what we call parents. I don't mean biological parents. Parents is devised, as you can see, in three subdivisions: role model, kibbutz, ava, aim, and proper discipline. Now, we're going to speak about role modeling tonight, because that's one of the disciples who have said that successful parenting is 50% depends on a good role model. 50% is how the parents role model, and we explain the dynamics, how role modeling works. Role modeling exerts one of the most powerful influences on children. What parents are, how they image themselves, what they project, and how they do is automatically reflected in their children. With the small children especially, who you can't relate to, you can't speak to, their main chinuch is what they see in the parents. Rabbi Moshe Aaron Stern, the Mekamenetz Mashgiach, once remarked, he said that children observe and study all that parents do. It's recorded in their subconscious mind. And what they do is what's called Torah Misinai, as if they got it from Mount Sinai. That's the proper way of living. We are our child's prime rebbes, and our acts are the basis of their chinuch. What we do is mechanech them. This is a story that I once heard from somebody. He told me the following story. He said that once on the night of Bedikas Chametz, the night before Pesach, so the father went out to be boided, you know, to his home. It was a big home, so he divided the home into different rooms, let each kid take their room, and he took the hardest room, which is the living room, the svarim, the the chairs and the table. That was his room, and he told the children to be baidik their room. So he made the bracha b'dikas chametz. He gave each one a flashlight. He told them, go into your room, be baidik it. They went. 5 minutes later, they backed down. You know how the kids do it. And they came back. They all finished. Meanwhile, the father's looking over the svarim. He's taking out the svarim, opening up the chairs and this. So one of the kids goes over to the father, and he says, you know, Abba, what are you doing? So the father looks at him as if he's crazy. What do you want him doing? He didn't want to talk because he shouldn't talk until he finished. So he looked at him and said, you know, 1 minute. So they go like this. They went like this. So he waited another 5-10 minutes, and he's still checking the svarim. And the child goes again to the father. He said, Abba, what are you doing? The father didn't know. He was like, he's dumbstruck. What am I doing? So finally, the father finishes being baidik to chametz. He says, kol chamira. He goes over to the kid and says, what do you mean, what am I doing? Don't remember? Like, you know, we made a bracha. I'll be your chametz. You're checking the chametz. That's what I'm doing. I'm checking the chametz. I mean, you don't have to be too smart for that. So the son said to the father very innocently, but I never saw you learn in the svarim a whole year. Why do you have to check them? So the children pick up from the father what's right and what's wrong. You know, why do you have to check the svarim if you never learned in them? So what is it? So we learn from here that, first of all, role modeling is something that the parents have to do. They have to build themselves and mold themselves to be living models of what they want their children to be. And it's never too late. Even if a person, if they're Baal Tshuva, whatever it is, they didn't have a good upbringing, but they can still role model something that they would like their child to be. And parents have to start now. As Rabbi Pliskin's book goes, you know, start again now. If you didn't realize this until now, start now. Start trying to train yourselves and your wives to be good role models. Because it's an important principle is that children learn more from what they see than from what they hear. You can tell a child from today to tomorrow the importance of benching properly, of davening. But if they don't see the father benching properly and davening properly the way it's supposed to be, it means nothing. If you see a child yelling, a child getting angry, or a child jealous at somebody else, at another toy that the other person got, or something else, ask ourselves, do we project on ourselves anger when a neighbor parked, you know, in our driveway? Or are we jealous when we see another neighbor of ours renovating their home? They just got a new car. They got a new, you know, latest electronic thing, which costs a few $100s. A new camera, whatever it is. A digital camera. Are we jealous? So whatever that happens, the child's going to image it and be the same thing. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that's usher to strike, to hit a child who's over bar mitzvah. Right? Why? Because the child may strike back. And if he strikes the parent back, he's over an aveira. So the same thing goes with yelling. Just like a striking parent brings a child to strike back, a screaming parent breeds screaming children. That means if you scream at your wife, you scream at your kids, scream at a neighbor, the child will do the same thing. Complaining parents, complaining about the prices, about this, about that, about the shul, or whatever it is, the children learn to be complainers also. If the parent is always a pessimist, the child would also be a pessimist. What makes you think what makes you happy, and where do you show your simcha when you come home? You show your simcha when you made a siyum on a gemara, you know, in the daf yomi, or you just got a tremendous shiur. It's a very hard masechta you're learning now, whether it's yevamis or erevin or something else, and you really grasp it now, you know, going through the sugya and you understand and you're coming home happy. Does that make you happy? What makes you happy is you manage to go to a store and there was a sale that day and you come back and you save money. You got the last ticket on Flight to Eretz Yisrael and save yourself $200, and that makes you happy. And then what makes you sad? Is it making you sad that you missed your minyan that day because you were tired or whatever? Or you did not understand the shir? Or you missed an opportunity to do chesed? Or what makes you sad is that you lost money. You know, I didn't get the sale out of extra money for this, and the price is going up. What makes you happy and what makes you sad? That is automatically reflected on the children. And parents, especially fathers, have to show they're happy with things of spiritual matters. So therefore, if the price of Luv and Esther goes up this year, another 20%, what are they charging so much money for? Complaining about Luv and Esther? When it comes to buying an iPod, you don't complain how much it is. You need it. You buy it. You know, you want an electronic, the MP4s they have now. Now, you don't know what an MP4 is? The MP3 with a little screen on it, so you can see everything on it. So if that costs like $400, you don't complain about that. But if a little Vanessa costs another $20-$30 more than last year, you start complaining. You have to buy special Shmur matzahs, you complain. You have to buy a mezuzah. Complaining is too much money. Is that what you're complaining about? So children see what's important in life. What's important in life is money. And when it comes to spiritual matters, the ruchnias that you complain about, when it comes to Gashmi, you say, don't complain. It doesn't bother you so much. What shows you simcha, and what shows you, and what, how do you project when you see it? Let's depict this with a story. There's a story of a mishulach, a fundraiser, who stayed over Shabbos in a relative's house. Now that Saturday night, he went out in his fundraising, and you know, he had to go make his rounds, as they said, to meet people, at appointments, and his host, was a relative of his, a cousin, asked him, can I have a few minutes with you, because I want to ask you a question about chinuch, about my child, I know, you know, you're a learned person. He said, okay, he said, I'm not too much of chinuch, I know I'm fundraising, but if you want, I'll try and see if I can help you. He says, how come my little son, right, my little son over here, I sent him to the best yeshiva, have tutors, have whatever he needs as far as materialistic needs. We have a tremendous house. In our household, we have Torah and mitzvahs all the whole day, and I can't get him interested into learning. He seems that his mind is away from everything. What do you think? How can I get him more interested in learning and doing mitzvahs? You know, common complaint to parents. You know, he's just not turned on. So again, he told him, I'm not too much into chinuch, but I want to explain you an incident that happened over Shabbos, and maybe that will explain your dilemma. Last night we sat down for the meal on Friday night, and your little Yanko, you know, the little tzaddikal, goes over in the middle of the meal, and he closes the lights in the living room. Closes the lights. And we're sitting there just by the candlelight, you know, of the candelabra, the light there. So you got up, and you said, Yanko, what are you doing? How can you do such a thing? You gave him a little patch in the face, you screamed at him, you got a little excited, he probably wanted, you know, some attention, he got his attention. Good, he's not going to do it again. And that was the end of that incident. The next day, after we had the meal, the daytime meal, we went to sleep, and he told Yankee, you know, you're playing with your friend here in the house, be quiet, because, you know, we have to rest. You know, obviously you have to go out tonight, make sure we have to get a good rest, play quietly. As we were going into the bedroom to go to sleep, we heard a tremendous crash in the living room, in the salon. What happened? They were playing tag, and one of them grabbed the tablecloth. It was a very expensive crystal, an heirloom crystal worth hundreds of dollars, went crashing to the floor, shattered to pieces. And you came out of the bedroom screaming and yelling, how can you do such a thing? Mamash, I got so excited. The whole house was shuddering from the way you were yelling at your son. So what does your son see? That the crystal is worth more than turning off the light. And that's the answer to your question. What gets you excited? If a child would take, let's say, an electronic, an MP3 of yours, and think it's a toy, or your cell phone, and take it to the bathtub with this, it's a nice toy to play with. Once he puts it into water, it's finished. Right? You can't do anything about it. He thinks it's a water toy. Right? You get excited, screaming, $100 at this, or if you take a digital camera. But what happens when the child says vulgar language, or he curses, or he says, I pick something up from the street, which is not nice? How do you react? So if you react worse when a child does something like that, when it comes to doing something wrong in a very, there's less intensity. Right? The intensity is less. The child sees what means more to you. The camera means more than Lashon Hara. And that's the way a parent has to project themselves. What makes you, what gets you excited, what makes you happy, and what makes you sad. Now let's say take with brachos. Right? Very important that you have to say, I told us the teachers also, when I speak to teachers, you have to say a brach, you have to say the words. Don't say the bracha. In Yiddish it's called unter de nos, means under your breath. Mumble the bracha. A child sees that, it means nothing to him. You can see a parent who goes to a child, a 6-year-old child, learns brachos in his school. So the parent says, okay, you know, our uncle here, show them how to make a nice bracha. Show Bobby and Sadie what you learned. So the child says, okay, I'm going to make a nice bracha. We'll answer amen. Baruch, Atah, Hashem, Elokeinu, Melech, Olam, Shakol, Ebedvorah. Everybody has nachas, the answer amen. The father takes the candy, he puts it in his mouth. That's the end. Finished. Doesn't mean anything anymore. Brachas don't mean anything. The father, I saw this by myself, by the way, with the parents, one of my neighbors. The father over here is telling the child to make a good bracha, but he himself doesn't make a bracha. You have to say the words. You don't have to have the kafanas of the Chafetz Chaim, but at least let the words come out of your mouth. Say the words. And just time, you should know halach, which I mention all the time, that if you move your lips and nothing comes out, the bracha is not valid. Lip service doesn't mean anything as far as bracha goes. Something, you don't have to hear what you say, you should hear it. But if you just move your lips and you don't know what you're saying, it's not a bracha. So if a child sees that, a child sees the father rushing through a bracha, so you can tell him from today to tomorrow the importance of brachas, but he's looking at the father, are brachas important? It's not, my father's a hypocrite. He tells me to do one thing and he does something else. The same thing is with davening. With davening in shul. You know, how does the father project himself when he's saying Krishna, when he's saying Shema Esrei? So could he turn his cell phone off, but it's not vibrate. So while he's saying Krishna, it vibrates, he has to look and see who's calling him. Right? He has to know who's there. He looks at the phone. So the child sees you can interrupt yourself in Krishna. Now, I've called sometimes people, and I want to reach them on the cell phone, and when he picks up the cell phone, he says, "Bi'ahafa es Hashem alekecha b'chol levavacha." Or I'll start benching. He's in the middle of benching, or he's in the middle of saying Krishna, and he wants to tell me that he can't answer the phone, so he davens into the phone. Like, the child sees that, like, what's davening worth? You can't, like, the phone has to be off. Right? I made a joke about this, but it's true. You know, in Shulchan Aruch it says there are certain things you have to prepare yourself before you go to daven. You have to make sure you have to jump off the beer thing, you have to wash your hands. Now in this generation, you have to close your cell phone. When a person walks into the shul, there's no valid reason why the cell phone should be on. Be off vibrating. It should be off totally. Right? Just like you have an important meeting. Imagine, right? Remember, Aaron Leitch Damon came here, everybody's going to him. Could you imagine why you're waiting online to see him, your cell phone vibrates, and you're giving shalom and you're looking at your cell phone at the same time? Doesn't go. So why are we talking to Hashem? Should it be different? So therefore, it's important. The child has to see that when you're benching, when you're davening, your soul focus is on that. Right? The phone rings. There's a story once of Rashi who was sitting in shul, and the father was sitting next to his son. And during davening, the son was, you know, not behaving. So the father goes, the whole time during davening. So after davening, the Rashiva goes over to the father and he says, "You think you're going to train your son how to be a good davener? When he grows up and his son is going to sit in shul, he's going to say the same thing. To the son also. If your son can't still, well, there's no mistake in the davening. What's the purpose of taking his davening? They disrupt them. They run all over the place. They hurt themselves. They get into a fight with somebody else. Right? If you want to run a babysitting service for your wife, that's something else. So your wife wants to take a vacation. She sends the child to shul with the husband. But in the meantime, he can't concentrate. Right? Something always happens. The child is crying. He has to hold him. Just doesn't work. There's no mitzvah to take a child who can't sit still to shul. And on the contrary, if they run around in shul, so what happens? The child learns that shul is a playground. A child has to come to shul when he's ready to sit down and daven something. If he thinks that shul is a playground, when he grows up, he'll think it's also a playground. They'll talk and they'll do other things, discuss business. And sports in the shul is something that shouldn't be done. So therefore, that's a different subject altogether. I want to bring a child to shul. Maybe we'll come to that later. But right now we're discussing about, we want to concentrate on davening. You're davening at home. You have davening Shemon Esrei. You're not distracted. No matter what happens, of course, unless one kid is bringing somebody else up. Pikuach nefesh, you got to go to them. But you're not interested if the phone rings, somebody's on the phone, or something happens. You just concentrate on the Shemon Esrei. That's how you show the child how to daven properly. You don't interrupt yourself. Not always looking around and seeing what's doing. The child learns how the father davens, how to daven also. Now, there's another interesting thing about sheker, saying a lie. It's very, very important. Chazal say that a parent should never promise something to a child and not keep it. Because if he does, it brings the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says, "Lindu l'shoinam daber sheker." You're teaching them to speak sheker. That's what the Mara says. Mara Masechta Sukkah. So Rabbi Chaim Dov Keller, Rosh Yeshiva Chicago, says as follows. He says, first of all, you see from the Gemara, it doesn't mean the father is a liar. If he says a lie one time lie, what will you do? You will be your child's Rebbe. Lindu l'shoinam. You teach him to say sheker. If a father lies once to a child, he teaches them how to say sheker. Now, let's give a story. The Pesach Kohen tells us the following story. He says, now one of the most difficult things we have is to wake up a child for school. Right? If I had the magic, you know, formula, how to get a child out of bed, dress by himself, and eat breakfast and get ready, I could be a pretty wealthy person. But it doesn't work. It's shaking. They put water on them. It doesn't work. They don't want to get up. You know, if they want to get up, they will get up. You can't get them out. They just don't move. So he says a story of a child who didn't want to get up for school. The mother shook him, the father shook him, didn't get up. So, okay, you want to stay in bed? He said, stay in bed. 9 o'clock, the child wakes up, and they say in there, like saying there, it's Israel, Boker Tov Elio, you want to go to school? Okay, go to school. I'll drive you to school. If you want, you missed your ride, I'll drive you to school, and I'll give you lunch and go to school. So the child says, well, I need a note. You know, why I came late. So he says, oh, no problem, I'll write you a note. We tried to wake you up and you didn't move. You know, what am I going to tell you? So Charles says, what do you mean? There's so many excuses. You know, the alarm clock didn't go off. I wasn't feeling well. I woke up with a stiff neck. You know, they have a whole book of excuses of what to do. So the parent says, well, you want me to lie to the teacher? You know why I didn't get up. I tried to and I told you. And he said, you don't want to get up. But the child says, why can't you say a lie? He says, a lying is mutter. The child says, yes, lying is permissible. Why is lying permissible? He says, because remember last time we went on a little tour with a family outing, and we went to Canada. Now on the way back, we were crossing the border, and we had a whole bunch of stuff in our, you know, in our suitcase and in the car in the back, and the customs officer will ask you, do you have anything to declare? So you told us, in case they ask, if you have something to declare, say no. And you know we have something to declare. So if you can lie for that, so why can't you lie and write a note? The child picked up right away that lying is permissible for what the parent told him. And this can happen many times, even if you're not going across the Canadian border. You're going to the zoo, you're going to the amusement park, and there are two prices, a price for a child and a price for an adult. So if you have a child who is, let's say, 12 and a half or 13 years old, and he's the adult, but he's small, he's scrawny, small child, he compares for a kid of 9-year-old, and you tell him, you have to ask, hey, just tell me you're a minor. Save yourself $3. So what you just did is you trained your child to lie, and you trained your child to steal. They're stealing from the zoo. Because it's illegal. So therefore, parents, that's what the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, Limdu l'shoinam daber sheker. Train your child to say sheker. So therefore, parent, if they want to train, they have to be careful to say the emes. If you promise something to a child, keep it. You promise something for the Afikoman on Seder night, right, as Pesach goes by, make sure you keep it. You tell him you're going to take him on an outing, you take him on a trip, you're buying him something, a toy. Keep your word. If you don't keep your word, you train the child to say a sheker. It's very important. And children can learn to say something false just the way the parents act. Now, the question is that, let's say, can you be mechanech your child with something that you don't have? After all, most people have different upbringings. Especially now we're talking to a crowd of most people there are Bali Chuvas. They didn't have the same as the children are going to cheder from the 6 years old. Most people didn't have that education. So they want the children to be better from them. So how can I be machanech my child to be a big masvid, to daven, you know, better than I am, or whatever? Can I do it if I don't do it myself? The answer is, you could be machanech them, but it's the attitude. Sometimes a child asks, you know, they see in the parent is asking from them more than the parent is themselves, but it's the attitude that counts. A parent cannot say that I'm different because I'm a father. If you're different than you're a father, I'll be different when I'm a father. If the father wants the child to be better than himself, he has to tell the child, listen, you're still young, you're still flexible, I didn't have the same education that you had, I wasn't brought up by frum parents, you were brought up by frum parents, I didn't have the cheder, the yeshiva that you have, you could become much better than me, and I'm expecting you to come better. Not that I'm different, and he said, if I was your age, I would also become better, but I can't. I'm old, I'm ready, you know, I'm already molded in my ways, it's different, I try my best. If a child hears that, he wants to become better. He won't see a contradiction. Because children know that the parents always want the children to be better than them. Especially, you know, in materialistic values also. They want to have a better profession. Let's say the father's hardworking. They want the hardworking father. They want the children to make more money, to have a degree, whatever it is. They want the world, the realm of Gashmius, materialism. If they had if they grew up with parents that didn't have the means, who couldn't supply them whatever they needed, they want to give it to their children. I didn't have it when I was small. Let me give it to you. So therefore, children understand that parents want for them more than they had for themselves. So with that approach, you can train your child. But by saying that I'm different, and I'm a parent, it means the world is that when I'm a child, I do this. When I become a parent, I'll do whatever I want, but nothing will work. It's a hypocritical approach. So that's how you can train a child in something you yourself don't have. Now the second part of a parent is training a parent in kibud av v'em, honoring you. Now kibud av v'em is one of the most important areas of chinuch, and extremely vital for the child's growth. There was once a CEO. Yeah. No, it's okay. Of Ohel. Ohel is a home for children from broken and dysfunctional homes. And he said that the common denominator in adolescent children who are in crisis is they lack respect for authority, whether it's parents, whether it's rebbeim, whether it's teachers, or even police. They don't have respect for them. They're never trained, you know, in authority. Therefore, you have to train your child and keep it out of aim that there's authority in the house. And there are three factors necessary to do this. First thing is to know the halachas. You have to know the halachas. The Chofetz Chaim writes in his preface to Hilchos Shabbos that a person cannot keep Shabbos unless he learns the halachas himself. Right? There's no such thing as a Jew in heart, which is called a cardiac Jew. Right? I'm good in heart. You have to keep Shabbos. You just have to know it. You have to keep it. You have to know the halachas. You can't keep it unless you know the halachas. So before a parent trains a child and keep it on the aim, they should know the halachas themselves. you must learn halachas. If you can learn in Shulchan Aruch, I think I was in Simon Reish Mem and Yerideya, learn it over there. If it's too difficult, you can take a Chaya Adam, or a Kitza Shulchan Aruch, or Oscar Lazabu called the Fifth Commandment. You don't have to go through everything, but we'll see soon go through the major halachas that are necessary for the child. Don't take for granted that the child learns the halachas from Beis Yaakov, or from a cheder, or wherever he's going to, because you don't know what they teach over there. You don't know how well they teach them. And from my lectures to seminary girls and parents, it's evident that many older children and parents are unaware of the simple halachas, the basic halachas of Kibud Av V'Em. For example, you have to teach a child to stand up for you twice a day. It's halacha in Shulchan Aruch. When you walk into the house, the child must stand up. Once in the morning and once in the evening, both for you and for your wives. Now, with my children, for example, when I walked in and they didn't stand up and they would ask me something, I said, you forgot to do something. I didn't know what said, you know, I forgot, what are you doing when a parent walks home? Oh, so I walked out the door, I came back in, and they stood up. And that's how they train themselves automatically. When a parent walks in, you stand up. Now, standing up doesn't mean to give a shaka like this. It means literally to stand up and stay there until, you know, the parent says you can sit down, or the parent says, and that's where you learn to honor. Because the thing is like this, a child will not stand up if a mailman comes to the house. If a plumber comes to the house, you don't stand up for them. So if he's standing up for a parent, he automatically will honor the parent, because it shows covering. So therefore, you train the child to stand up for you. A child should never sit in the parent's place by the table. The parent has a place by the table. A child does not sit in the parent's chair. He doesn't sit in the place, because that's Tati's, that's Abba and Ima's chair and place. You don't sit there. A child should never interrupt or contradict the parent when they're talking. You have something to say? Let me finish. You don't stop me in the middle. Right? Sometimes children are very, you know, they're nervous. They have to talk. You tell them, sorry, I'm not going to listen to you. You have to wait till I finish. The parent has to finish saying. There's no such thing as no. The parent says, no, it's no. Yes, it's yes. If it's chilly outside, you need a sweater. No, it's not chilly outside. It's chilly, you're wearing a sweater. You have to have a sweater, and you don't go out without a sweater. Finish. There's no such thing as saying no. Or if you don't want to play with a friend, it's time to go to sleep, time to eat dinner, whatever it is. So no is no, and yes is yes. It has to be that they don't contradict. Children have to ask politely something from the parent. Please and thank you. Not demanding. Like, who's the boss of the house? The children or the parent? So they don't say please, you don't listen to them. You forgot to say something. Everything has to be with a please. When you come home, they should greet you with hello. Not, did you do this? Did you get my supper ready? You have to go out tonight. The first thing a child comes, when he comes from school and the parent is there, you say, hello, mommy. Hello, tati. How are you? Right? The first thing they should say hello. Greet you. Greet the parent. Train them to serve you at meals or bring you what you need something. Very important. The Ramah writes this in Yerideya. He says, V'yisham shenu, part of the mitzvah kibud av v'em, is that a child should serve his parent as if a servant serves his master. You have to ingrain in the minds of the children that honoring parents is a privilege and it's not a burden. It's a privilege for you to serve your parents to get the mitzvah. And if you do it, you get a long life. It says, L'man Yarichun Yamecha, and also L'man Yitav Lecha. You'll have a good life. People forget about that. It's not only a long life for honoring parents, it's also a good life. In my booklet over here outside, Honoring Parents, I speak about that at length, about what honoring parents does to a child. Now, if parents have difficulty in it, or some parents will say, I've had this also, my mother doesn't want me to stand up for her. She wants me to be my friend. She sits next to me, she doesn't give us the end of the place. Right? So, you have to remember that demanding honor from your child is not for you. It's for your child's benefit. The more they honor you, the more they respect you, discipline will be much easier. You're doing it for the child's benefit. So it's no worse than if a child has an infection. You have to treat the wound. You have to change the bandage every few hours. And it's screaming because it's raw skin. You have to hold him down. One parent holds that, the other one treats it. And he's screaming, and you have to hold him down very hard. But you have to do it or else his whole hand will get infected. The same thing with Kibud Av V'Em. You're doing it for the child's benefit, not for your benefit. So that's how, see, not demanding covers for yourself, you're demanding it for them. Now, if you yourself have parents, right, and they don't want you to stand up for them, so girls ask me that also, what do you do then? You don't want to get them angry. So I tell the girls, or my students, I tell them, stand up for your parents when they're not looking, when they turn their back to you. Because you're not standing up for them, you're standing up for yourself. You get the mitzvah. So if your parent, when they turn their back, stand up and you get the mitzvah in the Torah. So that's if you have your own parents and they're not into this. But you should definitely train your parents. You shouldn't be moch on your cover too much, because it's tremendously beneficial. If a child honors their parents when they're young, then honor them when they're older, when they're adolescents, when they get older, when it comes to difficult years, they will honor them also. So you have to train the children in kibud av v'em. Now the next thing is that parents have to role model honoring each other. A child would not honor a parent if the parents didn't honor themselves. Never argue or disagree in front of children if you're arguing about something, especially about chinuch. Because when there's an argument between a father and a mother, there's always an exchange of some type of sharp words. Hey, stupid, why do you do such a thing? You're an idiot. That's why you left the car, you know, without the keys. One word like that, the child sees that the mother calls the father calls the mother an idiot or stupid, they'll think that the mother or the father is an idiot or stupid. And they'll think, you know, what if I listen to my parent? Now, if they both call each other stupid, so he thinks he has two stupid parents. So why does he ever listen to them? Right, he'll do whatever he wants. So therefore, arguing should never be done in the presence of children. Try and do it when the children are either not home. Of course, don't argue at all. That's the best thing. If you're not arguing with your wife, that's the best thing. But if you disagree, it should be in the privacy of your bedroom. You close the door and try not to raise your voice. Don't argue from the children. Now, especially when it comes to chinuch issues, parents should come out with a united chinuch. There's only one chinuch in the house. It's not that I have an opinion, you have an opinion. I think you should stay up late and learn maybe, you know, with a chavrus, and you say you should go to sleep earlier. Or if they, let's say they bring the Sefer Torah, the Achmas Sefer Torah, they bring the Sefer Torah into the neighborhood, and it's going to be a late affair. So the mother says, he can't stay up late. The father says, no, it's a one-time mitzvah, let him go and see it. So the child will know if he wants to do it. He's going to ask the father, can I go? The father says, go, why not go to the mitzvah? And negating the mother's authority. If the mother or the father gives the child a punishment, the worst thing you can do is to negate the punishment. Because if the child sees there's a difference in it, he realizes, again, there's no chinuch in the home. Children are very, very smart. They're very perceptive. They pick up things right away. And they're much smarter than we think. And they pick up things that they understand how parents work. And if they know that to do one thing, you get to your father. The other thing, you do to your mother. So they play a game we call yo-yo, between the father and mother. I want one thing, I go to my father. I want this, I go to my mother. Because they're going to agree with it. They're in disagreement. When a child sees that, they grow up totally undisciplined. So it's important that both of you should be on the same wavelength, right, when it comes to disciplining a child. You're on the same page, as they say. And if you disagree with it, so don't do it in front of the child. Come with an agreement and then tell the child, this is what we think, both the father and the mother. And if your wives do give the punishment, and you think the punishment is too harsh, it's worse for you to disagree with it than the child to get a harsh punishment. For example, if the child didn't clean up the room, so the mother say, not playing, you're not staying in the house, you're not playing with your friend. And you think, what do you mean? Just because didn't clean up the room, you can't play with his friend? It's too harsh. No, go play with your friend anyway. I'll give you a different punishment. That's the child already, that's the worst thing you can see. That's not what you're supposed to do. It's better for a child to get the harsh punishment than to see the parents are disagreeing in chinuch of the child. Now, needless to say, the lack of shalom bayis between a husband and wife is extremely detrimental for the well-being of a child. Children see that the parents are fighting, so they themselves will get to see there's no authority. So I once picked up something in the Reader's Digest. They made a survey, of course, you know, of non-Jewish kids. And the survey said that 70% of the problem children said that the fault was because there was no harmony in the family. The parents were fighting all the time. That's why, you know, they didn't grow up to be what they're supposed to be. Why do children have to suffer? Because parents are in disagreement. Right? If the disagreement, let them work out things. Go to a rabbi, go to a therapist, whatever it is. Why do children have to see them fighting and it ruins the children? Parents invest so much time and energy into the child's education. It could all go down the drain if they don't get along with each other. Now, on the contrary, if they honor each other, it's the best teacher for Derech Eretz. There's a book about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, which I advise all parents to read. It's called Rabbi Yaakov, published by Art Scroll. There are two chapters there, one on child raising and one on marriage. Very good advice that he gives. What? Rabbi Yaakov. It's called Rabbi Yaakov, and it's one on child raising and one on marriage. So the child raising, in the section on child raising, he says as follows. He says, the best counseling advice that Rabbi Yaakov gave was the example that he set with his wife, how to respect each other, and how they were living examples of how a husband should honor a wife. And that's the example that parents have to show their children. Children will honor the parents the same way that they honor each other. So if you honor the wife, You honor your wives and you show a kavod, your children also honor your wives. But if you don't honor her and she says something, you know, who's the boss of the house? I'm the boss, you're the boss, who's going to have to listen to you and this and that, the children already will grow up undisciplined. And in the same vein, you should honor each other, other elderly parents, elderly people, the in-laws. Now, I don't know, I hope everybody gets along with the in-laws, but in case you don't, it shouldn't be in front of the children. Because your in-laws are the grandparents of your children. And if you don't show them respect, children will learn not to respect older people. When they come to shul, there's an elderly person who doesn't know his way around here. And you get up from your seat, you give him a sitter, you show him the place, you give him a place, you give him a towel, whatever it is. Children see you, how you honor old elderly people, other people. They'll learn that from you also. So it's again, you're role modeling honoring. So a best way, so besides training the children to keep it ava aim, you also have to role model to keep it honoring. Honoring your wives and honoring other people, that's how children will pick it up. Now, I mentioned also a very important, how to teach your children the mitzvah of keep it ava aim. There are three times in the Torah that it's mentioned. First time is Yisro, the Aseres HaDibros. The second time is Parashas Kedoshim, which speaks about fearing, Ish Imei V'Avati Ro. The third time is the second Aseres HaDibros, which is the Parashas Vezchana. They're more or less divided into thirds of the year. So I tell parents that at those times, you should go over the halakhas with your children. Take one of these, the art scroll, Fifth Commandment, take a Kitzah Shulchan Aruch, write down the main halakhas of Kibbut Av Ha'Aim. At those times, read it off to the family, that they should know what to do. And eventually, the best situation is that children are in competition who should serve the parent. I want to bring the tati the drink. I want to bring him the cup. I want to bring him an extra napkin or an extra fork. They want to do it. That's what it should bring to them. Because they realize how important it is to do it. And they realize the halachas. So if parents would train the children those things, they would see a tremendous change in how they're disciplining children. Now the latest part of parents is proper discipline. One of the most essential components for a child's development is discipline. And without it, children are ruined. Now, there's a book that's called Kibbutz Los Angeles. I don't know if you heard it. It's in Hebrew. Los Angeles Kibbutz. Why is it called Kibbutz Los Angeles? Because in the valley, last time I counted, about 100,000 Israelis. They're all flocking to the valley. One of the places where the Israelis, you probably know that. The valley's full of Israelis. And somebody wrote a book about it. Kibbutz Los Angeles, you know, about all this, the Israeli life in L.A. So they asked one of the children, why did you come to L.A.? Why did you run away from the kibbutz life? Like, what was so bad about in Israel? Here in America, people are struggling to try and go to Eretz Yisrael to live there, and you ran away from them. Dafka came to America, and it was dangerous of all places, like the other end of the world. You know, why are you coming over here? So they said as follows. They said that the parents' attitude towards them was what made them come here. The parents said, you can do it, this is the life in a kibbutz, that you can do whatever you want, as long as you don't damage somebody else. There was no pressure. There was no discipline to do anything. He said if they would have the standards of the datiyim, with the front people, they would be masliach, they'd have success, and they wouldn't have to bother this. So child has to hear, so they were undisciplined. A kibbutz, you do whatever you want, so they weren't damaging somebody else. That they felt they were spoiled with that, and they couldn't, you know, manage in life, and therefore they left Eretz Yisrael. There's a, you know, we give the kids vitamins. So there's a new vitamin called vitamin N. Vitamin N means no. Child has to know there's a word called no. Right? You have to train it when they're young that there's no, because later he'll have problems in school. When his teacher says no, when he goes to work, his boss will say no, right? He'll go and get married, and his wife will say no, and he's not used to it, he won't be able to manage. He has to know that he doesn't get everything that he wants, and that's part of disciplining a child. One of my friends told me that when he was in school, many, many years, he was in the fifth grade. So the Rebbe patched one of the kids, one of his friends. Now in those days, you know, patching was, that's the way you got a kid to behave. Today it's child abuse. Teacher patches a child that doesn't like, they call the police, put him in jail. A parent patches a child and somebody catches them, put him in jail, child abuse. But in those days, right, they had the European rabbis, and they used to come to the class, they had an 18-inch ruler, thick wooden ruler, and if a person got out of hand, you stuck out the hand, the bang on your knuckles, and that was it. You were an angel the rest of the turn. Right? That's the way they kept people in line. That's the way it was. They didn't beat you up. They just, you know, made sure you know who's the boss in the room. So this child was patched by the Rebbe. He never heard the word no before. He never was patched by his father. He was so taken aback that he left yeshiva, and he never went back to Yiddishkeit. This guy, because of that. His father never disciplined him. In the secular world, they teach something called democracy in a family. Right? It's a known thing. Psychologists have told me there's something called, you know, democracy. Democracy means that everybody has the freedom of speech, press, or the religion, whatever. Everybody has their say. So democracy works in a country, but in a family, there's no such thing as a democracy. There's autocracy. Right? There's only one person who runs the show. That's the parents, the father and the mother. What the secular world calls democracy, the Torah calls chutzpah. Right? There's no such thing as children's rights. The parent says it and that's it. We have, and then, based on that, if you do think there's a democracy in the family, we have to change the Aseret HaDibros around. What does it say in the Aseret HaDibros? Kabed es avicha v'yesimecha. Right? So if you have democracy in the family, it's kabed es bincha v'espitecha. Honor your son and honor your daughter. Because they have a right to speak up also. There's no such thing in the family life. You have to be the boss. There's a psychologist who said he never hit his child, except in self-defense. Right? So that's what they think. You know, but we know, we have to, it doesn't mean, you know, the problem with this, so we see that the disciplining is an integral part of chinuch. But the problem is, when it's done wrong, it becomes a disaster. Because the most common methods that people try to discipline is screaming, yelling, anger, patching, threatening, and severe punishment, and make get the message across, but it's not chinuch. And it usually impairs the emotional growth of the child. That's not what the child needs. The child doesn't need a screaming and yelling parent. Now, I'd like to illustrate this with a story, again, in the book of Yaakov. Somebody asked Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, what does he hold about punching a child? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told him the following story. He said, in Europe, there was a Rosh Yeshiva called Reb Baruch Ber. He went to Yeshiva Baruch Ber Leibowitz. He was a Talmid of Reb Chaim Brisker. He said, Reb Baruch Ber once came home from Matzoy Shabbos, and one of his children put on the lights before Havdalah. It was after Shabbos, or after the Zman. It was not Shabbos, but it's an Issa Drabbanan to put on the lights before you hear Havdalah. So he went over to the child, and told the child as follows. He said, calmly, I love you dearly. You should have a long and happy life. But if you just transgress an Issa Drabbanan, and therefore you deserve a patch. And he gave him a little patch on his face. So Rabbi Yaakov said, if you can patch your child with the calm for a Baruch Ber, then you can patch your child. That's what his answer is. Unfortunately, many times parents lose themselves because they want to release the tension and the anxieties of the day. Right? Whether it's in the home, whether it's in work, they had a hard day at work, nothing went right that day. They come home, the traffic is stuck in traffic, people cut them off, they try to make appointments and nobody was available and this was scared. You know, days happen, just nothing goes right. You come, you are frustrated. So as soon as the child comes in and he does something wrong, he forgot to wipe his feet from the mud, we threw his backpack on the floor, we left his room a mess. Oh, what do you do such thing? You punch him right away. Is that chinuch? They're studying out steam. It's not chinuch. You have to be careful why you punch the child. The pasuk says, right, the Mishnah, which you're all familiar with, chosech shifto sonei beno, that if you spare the rod, not you spoil the child, it's the wrong translation, you hate the child. That's a different discussion, why it's called hating the child. But we see from Mishnah, you're supposed to punch a child. But it doesn't mean it's a blank check, it's a green light to patch for every little thing. Every time the child gets out, you give him a patch. Because, and you say, well, it's chinuch. You know, this is having the kind of a child, it's not the way you're supposed to do it. It's an interesting talk from Moshe Feinstein. First of all, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, he said, a father with a child and a Rebbe with his Talmud, even though he has to give him Musar, b'li lichos, you're not supposed to do it from kas. You can't do it from anger. And Rabbi Yisrael Salant translates what the Rambam means. You can show anger, but don't feel it inside. You have to be an angry face, right? But inside you're still calm. Right? If you remember Teddy Roosevelt, the President of the United States, so he had a motto, walk softly and carry a big stick. Right? In other words, you can show anger, but inside you have to be calm. Huh?
Speak softly.
Yeah, that's right. Speak softly and carry a big stick. Thanks. So that's the way you have to react. That's the way the child is. The child feels, he knows it's from anger. There's always an interesting story told, which I heard from one of my rabbis, and he says as follows. Some children, right, you know, you can punch them, you can punish them, you know, they want to show you nothing bothers them. You can hit them. You know, they have the same type of child, they'll do that. So there's a father who had a child, whenever he punched him, he never reacted, and, you know, he didn't know what to do. Once he gave him a punch, the child started crying. So the father says, you know, Manashtana, why is this different than all the other nights? Every time I patch you, you don't react, and all of a sudden I give you a patch, you're crying. So the son said, you patched me twice. He said, the first patch I deserved, the second one I did not deserve. I didn't deserve to get two, I only deserve to get one. A child feels when the parent is patching from anger. And it's from anger, it's not called chinuch. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in his Tshuvas, he says as follows, HaKol B'li Cheshbon, if you hit a child without any cheshbon at all, stunt the patch him, right? You want to release that, you don't have any cheshbon to do it, it's an extra patch, it's not chinuch. But then he says also, V'osr B'lav HaKol HaKol. If you patch a child unnecessarily, the father transgresses an avera of hitting somebody else no worse than any other Jew. He says that. Because he's a lav. He's a lav to hit another Jew. It says by Malchus, when Bezin's giving Malchus, you only could give him 39 lashes. You give him a 40th lash. It says, Lo Yosef, you can't give a 40th lash. So from there we learn that, that you cannot give somebody, right? You can't strike somebody. So it says the same thing applies from the father to the child. Just because you're the father doesn't mean you can hurt the child's feelings. There's no Yisrael Vainos Tavarim. You can embarrass him in front of other kids. You can patch him as much as you want and say, Chinuch. Everything is Chinuch. Right? Is it real Chinuch? Or again, is it letting go of steam? Or is it letting out some of your anxieties? Therefore, before you really patch your child or get angry or yell at him, you have to ask yourselves, are we punishing him? Hitting him because the child deserves it? Because it's easier for us. It's easy to give a child just a big slap and that's all. He'll behave himself. But that's not called chinuch. We shouldn't use this method of disciplining an excuse or as legitimacy to let out our tensions, as now from our tensions. In addition, Rav Wolber writes, he said as follows. He says, the big influence that parents can have on their children is what's called a love bond. Right? He calls the kesher amok bein hodl liyaladim hua mechavin aderach Hashem. That when they have this deep relationship, that's what the child is mechaven. It directs them towards keeping Torah and mitzvahs. He says, the worst thing that could damage it is if you break this bond between the parents and children. He says, there's nothing as much damaging than breaking this warm relationship. Because when children have this relationship, they're listening, they want love. Children want to have a parent that loves them. If they feel the parent does not love them, or they're hitting them, or they're breaking this kesher, what happens is they feel terrible, and it just ruins the child. So when you let out steam, you erase a tremendous amount of love between the parent and the child. And it's a tragedy, because you lost one of the most powerful tools in chinuch, and that's disciplining. If you can't discipline properly, what's going to happen is you will lose this tool of this love tool. This tool of influencing a child, this kesher or amok. So the bottom line is, that for discipline and punishment to be effective, a child must feel that it's coming from love. Now, how do we do that? How do we discipline properly? Now's not the time. I have the tape on it. I have two tapes on disciplining children. The ABCs of discipline. Discipline with and without force. But in the meantime, you can ask me, how do we control anger? Right? The children get on our nerves. At the end of the day, you're trying again and again. They don't want to get in their pajamas. They don't want to eat the supper. They don't want to clean up their room, and it just drives you crazy driving up your wall. I have to lose myself. How do you control anger? So the answer is, it's very simple. You control anger by motivating yourself. And we'll make what's called a Chinuch Habanim Foundation. We'll go to a few of the rich people here, make a foundation, and we'll tell you, listen, if you don't get angry at your kid, a whole day, you get $100. $100 for not getting angry at your child. The whole one day. At the end of the week, $700. The end of the month, $2,800, $3,000 for not getting angry. $3,000 a month. What can you do with $3,000 a month? Get a new car, renovate the house. Now, do a lot of things. Maybe have a bar mitzvah, fund a bar mitzvah, right? You do these things. So what happens if we have this foundation and people start signing up and we have the money in the bank waiting for them? So you wake up in the morning, the child gets up before you, he goes to the refrigerator, pulls out something, he spills something on the floor, it's a big mess all over the floor, something broke. What did you... $100. Everything's okay, don't worry. Just get a rag and clean it up. Right? All of a sudden, and like a magic spell over the parent, they don't get angry. You're ready to go to a wedding, right? And you have on your new suit, you just dry cleaned. And the child is sitting next to you, and he takes his icicle or whatever, and he pours it over your suit, and he stains it. 1 minute, $100. Everything's okay. I have another suit in the closet, don't worry, we can wear that. I have a spare suit. Everything seems to go smoothly. What happened? Because as soon as you decide to lose yourself, you see Ben Franklin in front of you, $100 bill, right? So that money talks. So you see, if you're really motivated, you can do it. Now it works. There are true stories with this. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter tells a story like this. In the olden days, people used to sell with push carts. These were push carts, sell apples and nuts. So once the lady was trying to sell apples to make up her nuts in a push cart, and some rowdy kids went over to her and they pulled out some of the bottom apples. So everything went flying on the floor and got dirty and soiled and everything. She was yelling and screaming, oh my pranos, for a whole day. And the kids were laughing at her. She totally lost herself. All of a sudden, a man comes over to her and says, can I buy a few pounds of apples? She says, but they're all dirty. So what do I care? I'm going to wash them off. I'm going to peel them. I don't care if they're dirty. All of a sudden, okay, I'll sell you some apples. She smiles. She's happy. She really composed herself. What happened? Well, she made the sale. Money talks. A person wants, they can motivate themselves not to get angry. If you know how damaging it was, that what anger does, the chinuch habanim v'shalom habayis, they will control themselves not to do it. Before it happens, make sure you're not going to get angry that day. Right? This is worth more than $100. It's worth much more money for the emotional well-being and the shalom habayis in the home. Reb Chaim Friedlander, a Talmud of Odessa, says the following story. Once a person came to a doctor and he had chest pains, didn't know what it was. Doctor gives an examination. He says, you know, your blood pressure is very high. You better watch yourself. He says, what do you do for a living? He says, well, I'm a floor manager. He says, what does that mean? He said, well, the floor manager, there's always something doing. There's merchandise coming in, merchandise coming out, I'm yelling and screaming all day's excitement. He said, how can I be calm? He says, you tell me to be calm. He says, the impossible. So the doctor says, listen, I can't force you to be calm, but I can just tell you one thing. If you don't calm yourself down, I don't guarantee that you'll live another year. That was the end. He was calm all of a sudden the next day. Why? Because he realized his life is at stake. So if a person really wants, he can train themselves to be calm, not to lose yourself, not to raise your voice when it's unnecessary. Of course, you can show anger, right? But you don't have to feel it. The child knows when you're angry. There are the three Fs, which I mentioned when you're disciplining children. Friendly, fair, and firm. You can be friendly when you're disciplining the child. Listen, I like you very much, like we mentioned before. A friend of mine told him that when his father disciplined him, he said, I'm doing it out of love. It has to be fair, right? Don't give a child a bad punishment or a big punishment for something small. If a child came 5 minutes late or didn't for learning, that doesn't mean he loses, you not take him to the park that Sunday. It's not, tell him he's 5 minutes for playtime. It has to be fair. It has to be firm. It means if you say no, the answer is no. You can't go out. It's no. Right? If you did something bad, no is no, and yes is yes. Those are the three Fs of disciplining, being fair, friendly, and firm. On this list is on the other sheet of disciplining. So this is just to briefly summarize the first part of this, that children need role models. They have to be trained and keep it out of aim, and you have to have proper discipline. How to know that child discipline a child. Now the next thing I just want to mention briefly is a kesher. How to strengthen the parent-child bond, because as you mentioned before from Revolva, a love bond is the most powerful tool in influencing the children. So if a child feels that his parent loves him, he doesn't want to break that bond. And it goes even when they're adolescents. We're going to speak about that tomorrow night when I speak about can you reason with your child. That this love bond between a parent and a child stays when they're adolescent and they'll want to keep it because they know they have a friend. The parents love them. Children are dying for love. Love from a parent is like the bread and butter. Children doesn't have love. It's a fish without water. He looks for love for other people in the street, from other friends, and who knows where he'll get it from. So it's important to keep that atmosphere in the home, that a parent should feel that the child loves them. Now, one of the things that parents, make a mistake is what we call the hot and cold syndrome. What does the hot and cold syndrome mean? One day, we smother the child with love. I love you, my best boy. I this and you're such a tzaddik and this and that. The next day, the child does something bad. You scream and yell at him. What are you doing? Yesterday, my father said he loved me, he cuddled me, he took me, and all of a sudden now he's yelling at me. What's going on here? The child gets lost. He doesn't know what the father thinks of him. Does he love him? Doesn't he love him? And what remains, the impression that remains, is the excitement that the father had. That's what stays with the child. So therefore, you have to be careful not to be a dual-faced person with the child. Each outburst of anger and criticism erases much love. Now, first of all, love and attention must be steady, must be unconditional. A child shouldn't feel that he's loved when he behaves. I love you if you clean up your room. I love you if you do your homework. I love you if you finish your meal, you brush your teeth, you say grisham or whatever it is. It's unconditional. A child has to feel that the parent loves them, It's the ahava she'eino taluya b'davar. It doesn't depend on it. The parents love you no matter what. You know, the secular expression, when the people get married, for better, for worse, for richer, for poor, right? I don't know if it still goes today, in my days, that's what they said, and they're depicting weddings, so I love you no matter what. You're my child and I love you. But you have to be disciplined sometime. I have to patch you sometime. I have to do something else, so, but I still love you. They have to know the parent always loves them. Belisha, without any, it's unconditional. Now, there are direct displays of love, going over to the child, and giving him a kiss. Stop. Now, I've not reason at all. Go over to the child and you hug him, you kiss him, say, I like you. When the bumper stickers were first coming out many years ago, there was a bumper sticker which said, have you hugged your child today? Mm-hmm. Right? Give him a hug once a day. Even the girls, you can give a hug once a day. Right? I can't say that the father should hug their daughters. Right? Unheard of. But, you know, for non-chassidim, you can go over to the daughter. There's nothing when you kiss your daughter and they come home from a tiyul, they come home from school, you didn't see him for a while. How are you? Give him a little kiss. I kiss my married daughters. Right, when they come to me for Shabbos, they like it. They realize there's a kesha between us. So you give them, it's very important to go over something physical. Put your arm around their shoulder. You're sitting next to them, put your arm as a sign of affection. That there are three critical times when you should show love to a child. One of them, when a child goes to sleep, be with the child, sing it, like the mother's job is to sing. Be with them, say Krishna with them, hold their hand, tell them a story, tell them something. A few minutes makes them feel good. When a child goes to school, if you're there, how do you send the child out to school? When children, young children, especially young children, they go to school, they feel that they're broken from their love bond to their parents. Something is missing. They don't feel this attachment. Now, if you have three or four kids, and they're lining up, and you get one of them out, so you say, one down, three to go. Two down, two to go. The last one is out. Baruch Hashem, have a free day today. Children know that the parents want to get rid of them. They want a free morning. If you send the child to school, if you're home when the children are going to school, be with them, let them go in the carpool, give them a kiss goodbye, throw a treat in the lunch bag, right? It makes them feel, right, that you love and you're thinking about them. And when they come home, give them a hug and a kiss if you're home. Very important. If you can be home, it's very important. A child goes to yeshiva, if you have children in yeshiva gedola, they come home, let's say, they're away for a week, they come home Thursday night, they come home at night and you're home, greet them. Say hello, give them a hug and kiss. It's so nice to see what you learned today. Right? Be there. They want that. Those few minutes are so important for a child's emotional development, both for a father and for a mother. Sometimes you can't be there. You have a say, you have a share, whatever it is. But if you can be there, you don't know how much it is. A child comes home and he sees the parents are waiting for him. They miss him. And the child goes away, the parents say goodbye to them. The child's going to camp. You say goodbye to him. You send them away, you send them a treat. You call them up, make a surprise visit. And also to the yeshiva. The child's away for yeshiva and the yeshiva's in town. Go visit the yeshiva once a month, once every 2 weeks. Speak to the rabbi. The children love it. I do it with all my kids. They love when I come to visit them in the yeshiva to see how it is, see the dormitory room, to see this. Show them that you care for them. Now, one more thing which I just want to end off tonight, which is very important. Two more things, is the parent has to show interest in the child's interests. Know what your child's hobbies are. Children are into, some when they get bar mitzvah, they like the cars, they like watches, they like, see what they are, the games and their hobbies. There's nothing wrong with sitting on the floor and playing with your child, right? It's not blood. That's what they want. Sit on the floor and play with him. So the mothers will sit on the floor with the girls and play with the mother and the dolls, and the father will sit and play the cars or whatever is a game with them. They like that. Sit on the bed with them. It doesn't mean you blow your dignity, they're not going to honor you. Of course they'll honor you. But sometimes they need that. That shows love and affection to the child. Sometimes parents say they give their love and affection to the child, but it's measured by what the child feels. It's not measured in time, it's measured in value. Sometimes parents say, how do I have, each child wants a half hour of me every day. You have three kids, it's an hour and a half. Who has an hour and a half? But they don't need a half hour. If you give 5 minutes to your child, and you give your whole self to it, it's worth an hour. And you give an hour, but you're always distracted with your cell phone, or something else, or looking at your emails, it means nothing to them. So find time. Take your child shopping with you. If you have to go to an errand, take him in the car. I have a nephew and a niece that have what they do is they have something called Tati and Mommy time. Which means every night, one parent takes out a kid and they go for a walk with them in the street. Just speak with them. No discipline, nothing. Just to some schmooze with them. Let's go out for a walk in the street for 10 or 15 minutes. The child can talk to them, they feel free, whatever they can do. So that's something showing that you're giving attention to the child. Now, for fathers, it's very important also when you review Gemaras, when you review the Torah with them during at the week. It's very important that reviewing, when you have this Avos Habanim, it should be a pleasant experience for the child. Not, this is how you learned this, what you know during the week. You sit down with the child, review the Gemara, the Chumash, the Mishnah. First of all, prepare it yourself. Make sure you know it yourself. Sit down, put your hand around the child. Let's do it nicely. Sing with him, right? And see how, and if he knows, to give him compliments. Let him look forward to it. Not always criticizing, no, you missed this word, you missed that. I see you don't know it so well. Even if you didn't know it so well, you can tell him, you know, Baruch Hashem, you did a good job this week. Hope next week you'll do better. Right? There's a thing called constructive criticism of concentrating on what the child did right, not what he did wrong. So if he did something right, tell him how well he knew it. A child sings Miris, and he's off tune. So don't say you're off tune. You say, listen, you sang the first part so nicely, let me teach you the second part. Right? Always the positive. And that make singing Miris, make learning with him a pleasant experience. And at the end, you give him a candy, you give him a treat, you say, I'm looking forward, you give me so much nachas to learn the next week. Now, that's the way a father has to act with a child. I had a friend of mine, who's now a mashgiach in Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. He told me when he was a student in high school in America, he was the worst student in the school. But his father never told him that. His father said, when he went over to him, he said, listen, I hope that one day you'll grow up to be a big time chacham. You know, you'll all of a sudden, and you'll learn. He went away to Eretz Yisrael, wanted to marry Yeshiva, and he grew up, he blossomed. His father never criticized him, never yelled at him. And that's what children need. They don't need criticism. Criticism is terrible for children. It ruins everything. You don't want to be criticized if you do something wrong in your office. It's the worst thing you want to do. You want to know how to do it right, not what you did wrong. You know what you did wrong. So if a child comes in, he doesn't know it well, he made mistakes, just encourage him. Next week will be better. I'm proud of you. And you'll see a little bit better. That's the way you encourage children. Reviewing chazri with the child, reviewing is a tremendous tool for a father to build a relationship with the child. It should be a pleasant experience being the father and children. And the last thing is, that after it's all said and done, we have to have tefillah. We have to dive into Hashem constantly. He should lead us in the right way and make the right decisions. So Sam Sofer had a son, the Ksav Sofer. He was also a big time chacham. And the Ksav Sofer, when he brought his child to the Tzanzer Rebbe, the father of the Tzanzer dynasty, he was marveling at his child. He asked the Ksav Sofer, what married you to have such a child as Tamar Chacham? So the Ksav Sofer took off his hat and he said, my child costed me a hat full of tears. He cried for his son. He davened for his son. The Chafetz Chaim, when he saw the Tehillim of his mother, he wept. Because he said, how many tears did my mother shed over this Tehillim that her child should be just an Erlich Hayid, right? A Jew, not a plain Jew. And look what she got. She got a Chafetz Chaim. The Stipler Rav said that if you want to have good children, you have to cry. Father once went through this. You have to cry. Father said, well, I can't cry. I'm not the crying type. He says, then let your wife cry. But somebody has to cry. And your wife davens over the candles. Let her shed a tear. Let her say with some kavana. Make it as if she's crying. That's the way Hashem will grow up the children. We know that lead me a lot of siyata d'shamayim, a lot of help from heaven in this generation. To keep the children should be away from bad influences. We should lead them in the right way. And by davening hard, hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us siyata d'shamayim to raise our children the way they would have a lot of nachas from them. Well, thank you. Is there any for questions?
If the children
aren't doing what you want them to do, does that mean necessarily that children aren't modeling properly? For example?
Well, a 12-year-old doesn't daven
very
well. Does that mean
that they don't see any daven? Well, there are different reasons. Also, I get this from many times from parents, what happens when children don't want to daven? So, for you to daven, it's not the way to do it. What you have to do is either try with rewards, or let the teacher help him out. But if you see that forcing doesn't help, more forcing is not going to help either than force them to do it. Right? Let him daven what they. I don't know. It depends what you know. What was not davening, then part of the way can't play from davening. Sometimes parents say, "Well, my children doesn't want to go to minyan, so let him daven in the house. What's the big deal?" When he goes up, you know, probably daven in minyan. There's a very important principle from Yaakov Kamenetsky and Rav Moshe Feinstein. They said, "Thank you very much." Yeah. Thanks. Somebody used to once speak with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Their father speaking with the Rabbi Moshe, and the child jumped on the table. So the father wanted to pass the child. So Moshe said, you're wasting your energy. So don't pay them for something, discipline for something, that they're anyway not going to do when they get older. I guarantee you, when he's a teenager, he's not going to jump on the table and speak with me. So the same thing over with davening. Right? Sometimes you can force it, it'll get turned off from davening. But if it's just something which is a stage, I assume he'll daven when he gets older, they'll have a meeting in yeshiva, or go there, or want to be there, and everybody else. You have to, you know, again, generalizations are very difficult, there's no situation. But it's a common thing that children either don't want to daven all the davening, or they don't want to go to dominion. Don't force them. You can try with rewards, right? Or try maybe make a class project, which I tell parents also. Go to the Rebbe, let him make a class project that if you come to dominion, to get some kind of a points in class or some money value. You might get supplementing yourself. You'll be the supplier of the money. But they'll appreciate that. Yeah?
I'm finding that even though we haven't had TV in our house throughout our kids' life and we don't have enough Game Boys and things like that, now they've found ways through the computer to have continuous entertainment that even on the websites that are supposedly kosher, like Nickelodeon or Cartoon Channel, whatever.
Right.
It's not only little silly games they're playing, but they're cartoons. And it's so hard to shut it off. And I feel like it destroys the environment in the house. It makes them not care about anything else.
Right.
It makes homework or parent quality time a burden.
That's right.
Because they'd rather be plugged in.
Uh-huh.
And just wondering if you have any comments on that.
So things like this. Of course, the best advice is not to have the computer with any type of website access, because once children get into it and they learn a little bit about, you know, the technical things, they can always find their ways around what to do and what not to do. And children that are glued to the screen, in fact, they're glued. You know, their mind's already, you know, they're programmed into it, and they don't have any free will anymore. They're just listening to that. Then there was what you mentioned, quality time and everything. They see the cartoons. Cartoons are also, right, not something which you want to watch. Because the cartoons, they beat each other up and they do all kinds of crazy things. So to stop it totally, for example, you don't have it in your house, that's the best thing. But what happens if you don't have it in your house? They go to somebody else. They'll find a house how to have it. So what I have a daughter that lives in America. I have one daughter that lives here. My son-in-law and my daughter, what they do is they have a little monitor in the house, and they have certain things that they're allowed to watch. They can't, first, they don't have any computer access. They have it on videos. They're videos of, let's say, a boys' choir, a play, something which is kosher, and that's what they can watch, right? And if they go to somebody's house, they must tell them who they're going to and what they're seeing. And if they don't report back, they'll never go to the house anymore. But you have to start that at a young age. The children, in other words, if you stop the children totally, see if you're in the Hasidic world, right? If you don't have it, they're not interested, but it's not true. I go to England and I stay in a Hasidic community, and the kids also get hooked onto the computers. You know, some of the fathers have a business or whatever. And if, you know, a Hasidic father came up to me in shul and he said, you know, my kid loves to watch the football games all the time. What am I supposed to do? A guy with pace and everything. You know, it happens. So once you have it, you have to know that it's here, it's going to become part of society. I just want to tell you why it became part of society. It's because as follows. This is from one of my rebbeim. He said, when I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, the big fight in the Jewish home was TV and movies, right? Keep away from the movies, get the TV out of the house. And they were successful. They can get out of the house. So they saw how to devise a way how to get TVs into the house. So first, when I was growing up, before they would think about computers, they had this thing called the telephones where you can see the other person. The little, they were experimenting with telephones with TV screens where you can see the other person talking. So Rav Palm said that if they ever make that something, a home device, if people can afford, it's going to be the worst thing that can happen to the Jewish home, because you can dial anything, get everything into your home. Mm-hmm. So they gave it up. Now they came to computers. Now computers, everybody needs a computer to be connected to the internet, because that's how you do business. Right. So the HR found a way of bringing it into the home in a way that you have to have it, and once it's there, you start using it for other, you know, for ways which are anti-chinuch. So it's here. How do we deal with it? You have to train a child when they're young. You want to watch it, I have to see what you're watching. You can't watch it without my permission. I'm putting on there exactly what you can watch. There's no such thing as cartoons. I have an article, by the way, in my house. It was written in the Reader's Digest in 1985. Now, the Reader's Digest wrote an article about what TV is doing to kids. And they spoke about cartoons also. And they said, cartoons are terrible. Even these games that they have on the computers, there's always somebody bopping somebody else and hitting them. And people learn that. You know, they see what it is. You know, they go on an airplane ride, they watch the movies, they're always shooting each other. It's so stupid. I don't know how adults can look at this. It's so stupid to me. You know, what are they doing here? Are they bored? They go, educate yourself. But that's what it is. And children see this. They have to know that this is not in the Jewish home. Now, they have to see that with you also. They can't see you cheating once looking at a screen or at a website or doing it at somebody else's house. If you're strict and you say, this is the new rule in the house, I'm going to watch what you're doing. And this, if you hopefully, best of Sharon, all your kids are, but if they're still young enough to train, that's the way you train them. You train them, you can not to cut them off totally, but you have to watch something. Coach, you have to know what you're watching. Yeah?
One of the tricks, I work with the internet all the time.
It's, yeah. No, but I was in the house with my daughter, you know, and the kid went to somebody's house and said, what are we doing in that person's house? You know, you can't go there because they have videos on the thing and you can't do it. You know, the mama scolded them. Said, I don't want to see you in that house again. No, if you keep, and you're consistent with that, and you're consistent with yourself. For example, let's say you don't want your kids to get a hold of secular magazines because of the pictures and everything else. But if you keep magazines in your bedroom under your pillow or under your bed, and they happen when you're not home, you know, they go into the bedroom, they want to see what's there, they'll find it there, you can't do it. So they have to be, that's what I mentioned before, the role model. You have to be consistent in what you're doing. If you're serious, and they see you're serious about it, they see your commitment to it, so they'll follow it through.
And Baruch Hashem, I haven't had a problem with my kids. Kind of hard. But even I keep, the rule that I have is, if there isn't a parent in the house, I will actually take the power plug from the hub, just take it with me in the car. It doesn't go, that's it. Fuck it. That way there is absolutely no, that's it, you know, fine. Do you have to write your paper? Write your paper. You need to get some notes on the internet. I'll be with you. We'll get the notes. We'll download them so that way you've got them to write your paper. It'll take us 10 minutes to get all the materials that you need. You don't need to do it on the fly. We'll get your materials. Now I have a bucket. Now you can do your word processor. I went through high school and college without having a word processor. You know, you can do it.
That's right. Any other questions?
How could a parent, if they understand that the father would talk to the children to stand in front of a mother for a father, but it sounds a little bit awkward just asking the couple for yourself.
To say that for you?
Yeah.
Well, what difference does it make as I mentioned, if a child has an infection and you have to treat it? You're doing it for their sake, not for your sake. By them standing up for you, they will learn to respect you. You'll have a long and happy life. And doing it for them. It's not gaiva. People say, well, it's gaiva. So I'm Thodia. Stand up for me.
I understand that.
Yeah.
The parent can work it out in himself. But how should we relay that to the children?
You tell them. It's a mitzvah from the Torah. It says in the... Go open up the Shulchan Aruch. And it says in the Shulchan Aruch, stand up for your parent. And it's a mitzvah. What do you want me to do? You have problems? Go to Kaddish Baruch Hu after 120 years. And say, why give the mitzvah? Yeah.
How do you do about bribing? I mean...
What?
Bribing.
Very good tool.
If you want to start a new behavior, you know, offering a $10 allowance a week if they're pulling this and this off.
Very good. I mentioned that, and that will be speaking about tomorrow night, about bribing, about giving rewards. It's a very, but the Rambam mentions it, by the way, if you want to know the source of it. The Rambam mentions the whole thing about giving rewards, and after the Rambam, all Svarim, like from that time period, the Rambam lived the year about 1,000 till about 1,500, which is the Reishis Chachma, the Menorah Samor, all the Svarim that speak about child raising, bringing down the Rambam, you're supposed to try and give rewards. And rewards is a very powerful tool. And if it works, you should be lucky. Because parents have told me sometimes they're trying to give rewards to the kids and doesn't, they don't want the rewards. So you got to try a different method. If a kid wants rewards, do it. Go for it. So you'll say, well, how much, you know, how when you get, how much rewards have to give him when he gets older? Usually when they get older, they'll mature and there's no rewards of a small children. They'll do it without the reward. But if it works, do it. They say to him right here, go for it. What's the next one?
Question. You were talking about the potching thing.
Yeah.
So first of all, like, what kinds of things are worth potching for rather than just verbal discipline? How often is okay? How often is too much? And, like, you talk about the maximum age. I think post bar mitzvah is no good. What's the minimum age?
So that's a tape on. I can answer the question if you wanted to go to that. it's a long discussion. That's what the whole hour is, discussion about disciplining. But basically what I say in a nutshell is potching is like an atom bomb. You drop it once and it's a deterrent. The only way you can get through your kids with potching, it means you're not a successful parent. Mm-hmm. It means you're a dictator over them.
Right.
So potching, now you can't potch a two-year-old child unless he's touching fire or touching something. He doesn't know what he wants. He doesn't know what you want from him. He just, you know, he'll scream, he'll cry, and whatever it is. So you potch him once, he knows that it's there. And afterwards, you don't punch him again. He just knows that, you know, if he does it again, he's going to get smacked, so he's not going to do it. But, you know, you can do it once. But Rav Volbe says that the rod, we say, spare the rod, does not be a rod of destruction, it be a rod of pleasantness, of depriving a child of a privilege. It's also called a patch. Depriving him of the privilege is also going to be very effective. He doesn't get playtime, he doesn't get this, he doesn't get that. That's also be effective. How often? I said once or twice. If it's too often, that means there's something wrong with the parenting. You can't use that as a method of parenting a child, because as a child gets older, you can't punch him. Right? It's not going to work. Now, what's the minimum age, maximum age? So in Shulchan Aruch it says, from the bar mitzvah, the Rabbanim say, even younger kids now also are very chutzpahdik. I've seen in shul, a father pick up to a 6-7-year-old child, if you do that one more time, I'm going to patch you. The child says, I'm going to patch you. Little kid like that. I'm going to patch you back. So that's the generation that before Mashiach comes, there must be a lot of chutzpah. See, again, you have to, you know how to work it out. You have to listen to the told that.
Sometimes there's special things that we do, like after candlelight, Friday night, we give him a little sweet,
yeah,
or a special time with him. Take those away as punishments, it seems like that's
not that. Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because that's time, quality time. You take a playtime away from them, or take take a different, you can take a treat away from them. The servant Reb Baruch Ber, when he wanted to show his displeasure with the child, so on Friday night when he made Kiddush, he used to give the little Kiddush cups to the kids, what we have today. So if a kid was misbehaving, he wouldn't give that kid a Kiddush cup. And the child knew already that the father was angry at them. So you could say, listen, you didn't behave, you don't get this sweet. But you have to be careful, you know, to not do it too often. And the child has to get the message across that he misbehaved and he won't do it again.
You wouldn't give him a Kiddush
grape juice?
Like a
Kiddush cup.
No, that's what he did. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just telling you that to take that, it could work, but you have to know it. It's very difficult, it depends on the child. Could be a bit more effective to say that since you didn't behave, so right after the meal you have to go to sleep. There's no playtime for you. And that's all. But if you feel the sweets of something, you know, spiritual, or it's a quality time with them, then maybe you shouldn't use that. Yeah?
Something the Rav can address, something that's very common, at least in my household. If you're not in unison with your wife, as far as something that's going on with the kid, so the wife is handling the situation, and if I don't agree with her way of settling a situation, mm-hmm, with the kids, most often than not, I'll just be quiet. But then she'll turn to me in front of the kids and say, Abba, can you please tell him, or tell her, you know, Abba, please. In other words, she's trying to have me reinforce what she's trying to do. So I have two choices. Either I can just, something that I don't agree with, go ahead and back, mm-hmm, her.
Yeah.
Or fumble it somehow. I mean, should we, is it more important to be in unison as far as strategy and not show just,
It is, but you have to avoid the trouble before it starts. You have to tell your wife, don't do something until you speak it over with me. If you want to settle something with the children, before you do it, yes, me, let's see how we'll do it together. I'll agree with you. In other words, you avoid it. Once it's there, you can't do anything about it. Yeah, with your wife.
Yeah.
That's right. If you have, we know more or less how to discipline children, and let's be in agreement with what to do. It's too harsh, not too harsh. What do you do with fighting children? You know, different things come up. We have to know what to do. Yeah, would you say?
Many of us have people in the family who are either Jewish or not pro.
Right.
So, you know, today I had a situation with my daughter, we were walking past somebody's house, and their grandparents, her peers' grandparents, were pulling up in a car. It happens that the grandmother is not well, so she said, why are they driving on Shabbos? I said to her, I said, you know, well, she's not well anymore, so if they want to be with the family, they have to come over. And she said something like, well, that's not really an emergency. I said, well, it's an emergency, but, so any thoughts on dealing with these situations?
Well, when my kids were growing up and they saw people driving on Shabbos, they thought Israel is full of Goyim.
Right.
Only Goyim drive on, Jews don't drive on Shabbos,
mm-hmm.
until they realize that they're Jews.
Yeah.
So what do you tell them? I tell them they don't know any better. These parents, you tell them, they didn't have the upbringing, they don't know. And that's where the generations before Mashiach comes. I had a situation where her parents were divorced and her mother married a non-Jew. The mother wanted the children to come to their house. You know, when she came to America to visit them, and she made the whole house kosher and this, and the children knew that the mother's husband was non-Jewish. And she asked me, what do I tell my children? How can my bubby marry a guy? So I told him, tell him that before Mashiach comes, everything is possible. That's all. I had no answer to tell him. What am I supposed to tell him? You know, they didn't know better. She knows better. She knows she can marry. They did anyway. So I told them, before Mashiach comes, everything's possible. It worked. In child raising, basically, whatever works is what has to be done, as long as you're not doing the wrong thing. It's hard to know exactly what to do, but if you're not doing the wrong thing and it works, so it worked, and that was it.
With grandparents, is it, would you recommend, should we tell them not to drive, not to drive up the house on Shabbos, or,
Some people do that. Some people tell the parents, listen, you want to do it, but don't come to the house. In front of the kids, I have a student of mine whose mother also married a non-Jew. Her father was killed in an accident. She decided to marry a non-Jew. Now, he lives in Kiryat Sefer. Kiryat Sefer, is a real Haredi super, whatever you call it. Everybody's from there, but black cats. There's no such thing as not being even modern. So she came to visit. She comes every year to visit them. Last year she came, and she brought her husband with her. Right? So what are you going to bring a guy into the house? He said, don't bring him in. I don't want my kids to see this person. I don't want him in their sight. Wherever you take them, he's out of sight. He told her specifically, don't bring him into the house. So this year she's not coming with him. He made it pretty clear to her. So, of course, you have to have respect to your parents. Tell your parents, listen, I'm bringing my kids in a certain way. It's not right for them to see this. You want to drive? You can do whatever you want. But please not in front of my children. Park the car a block away and then walk to the house. They do see it, you tell them, listen, they don't know any better. They didn't get the upbringing that you have. Baruch Hashem, you have the upbringing. Right? It's not an easy situation, but if it works, then that's what you do. You have two more questions.
Do you have some tips for helping get the line sink? Because if you have one parent that's more lenient, one that's more strict, but the kids start always going to the parent that's more lenient to get
that's right.
more lenient ruling. So how can you
get a modified question?
So the best thing to do is that they both come and see somebody and let them, a rav or somebody and tell them what to do. Or listen to some type of parenting tape and let them, tell them we're not doing the right thing. I had this situation in my house also. I was more lenient, my wife was more strict, and I didn't have any direction, but it was many, many years ago. Till I realized, we have to be in sync, as you say. So you have to sit down, maybe make a workshop together, listen to some tapes or read books and see how we can make it together, come across this subject and see how we can make it work. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good Bach. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.